Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
This is Sports Saturday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Hello and welcome into Sports Saturday here on Sports Radio 810. I'm Joshua Briscoe in with you for the next couple of hours to talk about a whole bunch of things going on in the sports world, most notably the Kansas City Chiefs facing off with the Tampa Brady Buccaneers tomorrow afternoon. A lot of things we'll cover, though, from Chiefs to KU basketball. And we're going to get really into the weeds on KU football today. Nope. Hold on. I've just gotten a message from producer Beards McFly. No, he said, don't do that. All right. Fair enough. We'll talk some Chiefs. We'll talk some KU basketball. And we'll talk about whatever else distracts me along the way for the next 120 minutes or so. I'm Josh Briscoe. That's Beards McFly. And we'll have two guests joining us. A double Matt Saturday morning. Matt Galloway will join us at noon to talk about KU, and Matt Connor of Arrowhead Addict will join us at 11:30 to cover a bunch of Chiefs things. Matt Galloway for the Topeka Capital Journal. And we'll talk more KU later. We talked about it some yesterday, and we're all going to have to make sure we stop mispronouncing Christian Brown's last name. Yes, I know we should have all learned how to do it last year. I read his name yesterday for the first time in several months out loud and immediately said Braun, and I have to acknowledge that. And I'm going to be better. I'm going to take this opportunity, much like Andy Reid after a loss. I'm going to say that's on me. We're going to kind of recalibrate, and hopefully he'll end up giving us lots and lots of reasons to keep saying his name over the course of the rest of the season. But tomorrow's Chiefs Bucks. I know some of you care about KU basketball. Pretty much everyone within the sound of my voice right now is excited about Patrick Mahomes versus Tom Brady tomorrow. And we also heard pressers yesterday that you may have missed because it's a long holiday weekend. So I've got some stuff from Steve Spagnuolo, from Eric Bieniemy, and a few things that I think you're going to want to hear, that you should hear from both of them, about what they're looking forward to doing and seeing whenever they play Tampa tomorrow afternoon. I think the big overarching story, there's something smaller that I've been kind of circling back to over the last, really the majority of this last week, that we'll spend a good amount of time on today. But the big overarching story, I think, is one of the best sort of feelings in all of sports, really, is you get a grade A, top tier, like heavyweight fight name battle between two quarterbacks. Whatever actually happens on game day is one thing, but we get to spend this entire week talking about Patrick Mahomes versus Tom Brady. And yeah, they will not go head-to-head against each other. They will not be on the field at the same time unless they meet at midfield after the game. And then there's COVID that might derail that. And also, Tom Brady sometimes just goes to the locker room if he loses. You know, it's just part of the game. I think that story is largely very stupid, but it's also kind of funny. It can be both. Oftentimes, things that occupy those spaces are both. But they will not be head-to-head in the traditional sense, although last weekend there was a sort of a quarterback battle because Derek Carr and Patrick Mahomes were both going largely blow for blow, and both defenses offered a meager resistance to what either quarterback wanted to do. And ultimately, the Chiefs won that game not because their defense came up with a stop and not because their running game took over and not because they had a kick return for a touchdown or because of some big game-changing turnover. The Chiefs beat the Raiders because they had the better quarterback. And that's not always how games are decided, even though it's sort of my hunch to kind of always go that direction. Largely, I think if you overemphasize the quarterback position, you're still going to be right way more often than you're going to be wrong, because it is such an important position. It's not literally the only thing that matters, but sometimes it certainly feels like it. in this game, the Chiefs are going to have the better quarterback. They're going to have the better quarterback in every game they play in for the next decade, except for maybe whenever they play the Packers or Seahawks. You know what? Over the next few years, maybe the Chargers. But they're never going to have the worst quarterback. In those instances, they may be going blow for blow. They may be neck and neck in terms of our quarterback versus their quarterback. But the Chiefs are going to have that advantage in almost every game for the next decade, and even whenever they don't have a clear advantage, they're not going to be trailing, which is just a wonderful feeling. I'm never going to let that feeling go away, because it's so remarkably rare and so unbelievably difficult to be at that level at that quarterback position that's obviously so important. Anyway, maybe we're zooming too far in, and so at some point today, we'll talk about a Todd Bowles defense. We'll talk about all of the Buccaneers' weapons. We'll talk about the Chiefs' defense taking a step forward. But the thing going into the game tomorrow that deserves to be front of mind for you is the fact that we're going to get, probably for the last time, Patrick Mahomes versus Tom Brady. They could meet up in the Super Bowl in February, and I would be perfectly happy. I would hit the button and take that right now. Deal, Howie? Yes, I would love that. But this is probably the last time these two guys will play, because they're not going to go play the NFC South again for another 4 years after this one. And I'm not anticipating that Tom Brady's probably going to play for four more years. Feels like, I think he signed a two-year deal. Feels about right. Maybe he'll go for four. I don't know. But it very likely could be the last opportunity we have to see Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady face off. So that's exciting. Also, from a biased pro-Chiefs standpoint, it's exciting because the Chiefs are on a hotter streak right now than the Bucs are. And listen, I don't want anyone to head into this game with some sort of delusion that the Buccaneers have actually been terrible this year. If you only watch their game against the Rams, even, I don't think you should be thinking about, oh, yes, the Bucs are falling apart. Because they've actually had some of the most dominant moments in the sport this year, but they've been up and down. And, you know, I've said things to this end, a thousand times into a microphone, but You are not what you are at your best or your worst. You are what you are most consistently. And so the Bucs have a 7-4 record, about a 600 and change winning percentage. You know, that looks about average. Well, they lost the first game of the year against the Saints, who are a very good team, but also the Bucs had one of the toughest off seasons out of any team in terms of, we're going to make this quarterback make sense in Bruce Arians' system. He's going to work with all new weapons and all that. Now, listen, the Chargers also would have had that. Justin Herbert would have had that, and he wasn't even the starting quarterback throughout the offseason practices and all that. They were planning on Tyrod Taylor, and then he got thrown in week two against the Chiefs, and he's been great. So it's not an excuse, but I understand it. It explains some things there. They lost to the Bears by a point in week five. Well, You see them trying to continue kind of ramping up there a little bit, but also the Bears had a really hot start that has since obviously cooled off. They lost to the Saints again in bludgeoning fashion. Then they bludgeoned the Panthers right back, and then last week they lose to the Rams by a field goal on Monday night in a way that we all saw, and we all went, oh, you know what? Maybe this isn't going to work for Tampa. Maybe Tom Brady is just sort of just hitting the swap button from Jameis Winston to Tom Brady. Maybe that's not going to elevate this team single-handedly. And of course, that should have been something that we were, you know, considering as a possibility this entire time, because it was always very possible. It's a more complicated exchange than that. They just showed on NFL Network a Taysom Hill highlight, and look, I think that's ultimately going to end up, probably not against the Broncos this weekend, but I think eventually we're going to see Taysom Hill look a whole lot more limited. I thought he looked limited last week, but productive enough, right? Well, Drew Brees to Taysom Hill is not an easy one-for-one swap. Neither is Jameis to Tom Brady. But the thought was, well, you can just plug him in. If you get the best out of Brady with all those weapons, they're going to take a, you know, big leap forward. And in reality, whenever they're doing the things that they're comfortable doing, they're an extremely good football team. And whenever you can make that offense uncomfortable, they look remarkably fragile. And I think that's going to be the challenge for the Chiefs defense this week. But it's really going to be that's going to be the Tom Brady conversation that we have, you know, on the postgame show tomorrow night. Well, is Tom Brady washed or is Tom Brady back? Well, in reality, it's probably going to be, was Tom Brady comfortable or was he uncomfortable in this game? We talked about this last week earlier this week on Almost Entirely Sports. Something that that Ryan Tracy and Matt Verderam both talked about a little bit, and honestly, there's one specific part that I can't remember who it was that discussed it. You can go find out for yourself if you go search for Almost Entirely Sports wherever you get your podcasts, or go to aes.show. It's a great URL, and you can because they were both superb on Wednesday night. But the conversation we had there was that in New England, Tampa or in New England, Tom, I want to call him Tampa Brady as his actual name now. And it's not, that's the name of the city now. In New England, Brady worked short to deep. And it's why, you know, James White became a household name, because he was what that offense oftentimes ran through. To another extent, Julian Edelman, at their best, Rob Gronkowski. I can't think of a consistent deep threat that the Patriots really had and really utilized since Randy Moss. They tried a little here and there. There's a little Mohamed Sanu attempt, right? But ultimately, that was an offense that ran through the running backs, the slot receiver, and the tight end. And, you know, Brady, we talk about Brady getting old. The deep ball going away is one of the sure signs of that. He's been awful on deep passes, especially these last few games. I think he's 0 for 20 something over the last four games going deep. Ronald Jones is not a pass catching running back that he's comfortable with. Gronk isn't the same short yardage threat that he was. I mean, we even saw against the Rams, like, he worked to Antonio Brown a little more often because he kind of fits the more Edelman adjacent sort of profile than either Chris Godwin or Mike Evans. And there's a ton of talent there, but what Bruce Arians wants to do is look deep and then come back if you need to. For Brady, not only does your arm strength deteriorate as you get older, but your accuracy also declines when down the field because you're overcompensating. You try to force the ball because your arm strength isn't what it was, and so you're a little bit miscalibrated because you've got to really. If you went outside and threw a football during Thanksgiving to anybody, it's relatively simple math. Why are you more accurate throwing the ball 5 yards than 10, than 15, than 20, than 40? You got to be a little more reckless mechanically to get the ball down the field. For Patrick Mahomes, going 40 yards downfield looks remarkably similar to how he throws the ball 12 yards downfield. Which is incredible. I mean, like, you can think back to the best days of Alex Smith or whatever. He could get the ball 40 yards downfield, but it looked like he would do a little, like, running start, crow hop, and then he would turn into a trebuchet. Watch Phil Rivers throw the ball downfield, and you'll see what I mean. For this weekend, what I expect the Chiefs to try to do defensively is to not allow those deep options to be there. But I would have no problem trying to tempt Tom Brady into going to contested shots downfield, or at least giving the inclination that there's going to be a little less traffic deep downfield than there will be in all of the short stuff, and say, hey, you know, we're going to clog up the middle of the field. We are going to disrespect your running backs out of the backfield because, or disrespect you by covering the running backs out of the backfield, similarly to how the Patriots did to Derek Carr whenever they played the Raiders several weeks back, where they were literally doubling checkdowns and running backs out of the backfield. We're going to say, you know what, I don't think Ronald Jones is going to end up catching 12 passes for 90 yards in this game. We're going to make sure that that option's not there for you. And we're going to say take your chances downfield. We're not going to let you do the thing that you want to do. Alex Okafor talked yesterday. I didn't even cut the clip for this beard, so don't worry about it. But he talked yesterday about, you know, just how everyone pretty much knows that if you can get pressure on the interior on Tom Brady, it changes his entire game. That's not a diss on Tom Brady in any way whatsoever. That's true for literally every quarterback. I mean, think about the times where Patrick Mahomes... Now, look, Patrick Mahomes' floor is still... His worst game is still unbelievably good. And I don't even just mean like his worst game is better than Derek Carr's worst game. I mean like his worst game is a good game for most quarterbacks in the end. It's crazy. It's just an absolute, literally unprecedented, completely unfathomable when you look at some of the stats that speak to that. But You pressure Patrick Mahomes immediately and up the middle. He starts backpedaling, and he can still throw off of his back foot in a way that very few other quarterbacks can. But he can throw off of his back foot. He can do the backpedal and then over the top thing. He can bail out of the pocket better than pretty much anybody. But everything gets disrupted timing-wise that way, unless you're literally planning for that. So, of course, pressuring Tom Brady up the middle is the exact, like, if you could do one thing guaranteed, if you could, I've talked about NFL Street 2 on probably a monthly basis, because it's not only is it the best football game of all time, it's like a top, maybe like a top five game of all time. I love NFL Street 2 on the GameCube, GameCube only. You're allowed to play on something else. I won't. I don't remember what show I said this on. I think I was telling Rudy about this, Beards, but I bought a GameCube Bluetooth. Actually, I asked for it for last Christmas, and I got it. Santa came through clutch. I got a wireless Bluetooth GameCube controller that pairs with the Switch, but you can also pair it with the PC. And so what I was telling Rudy is that if emulators were like a legal thing that you could have on your PC, I would have played, you know, many hours of NFL Street 2 through an emulator on my PC, playing NFL Street 2 on GameCube on PC, if emulators were legal.
Only if.
Yeah. I mean, if they were, I would have done that pretty much immediately after getting that controller. I'll tell you what, though. I bought two copies of NFL Street 2 on GameCube. Because I played it so much, and like eventually my brother probably just sort of like skidded it across the cement floor of our unfinished like second basement or whatever at my parents' house, and it, you know, turned into a coaster or whatever. I literally went and got another copy of it at a GameStop or something like years after it came out. But if emulators were legal, you couldn't, you know, there's no disc to destroy. It's such a good game. I also, whenever I moved at one point, I lost my old GameCube memory card, which is really heartbreaking, but it also kind of gave me, you know, it gave me permission to start over again on the PC with the emulator. If that was legal, I would be able to do that sort of guilt-free after properly mourning the loss of my memory card. GameCube is such a good console, such a good controller. I love it all so much. The GameCube controller for the Switch, basically it maps like a pro controller would, and so any game you can play with a pro controller, you can play it with the GameCube one. It feels about 5% like thicker or a little less. I haven't put the I'm sure, hundreds of hours into that controller that I had to my GameCube one, so maybe it would wear down a little bit. But there, it's about 5% offline. You know, it's an officially licensed like Nintendo one, but it's about 5%, not quite the same hand feel as my original GameCube controller, which I still have, because I still have the GameCube in an old like treasure chest, actually. It's ironic, but it's fun. It was like a family... Beard just looked at me quizzically, so I'll explain this to you and everyone, and then I'll return to talking about Chiefs Bucks. I have this big, it really looks like a pirate treasure chest, but it was like, I have to ask my mom to verify this, but it was basically, it like came over from Europe with like my grandma's grandma or whatever. It was like the chest they came to the colonies with or whatever. It wouldn't have been colonies at that point. That's for dramatic effect. I don't know how old it is, but we just had it at my parents' house for a long time. And then when they moved to Florida, that was like one of the things that I called immediate dibs on. It's like, I want this treasure chest. It's the most Animal Crossing looking thing that I own, because you don't have just a treasure chest in like a normal house. That's a weird thing to have. But for me, not only do I have it, it's what I have old electronics in, basically. So it's, for me, I get an extra joy out of it knowing that I have this very old chest filled with like GameCube and Nintendo Switch stuff. Fills me with great joy. How did we get there?
Because you were talking about NFL Street 2.
So, if I could NFL Street 2 Game Breaker or Game Breaker 2 any player in the game tomorrow, thank you, Beards, it would be Chris Jones, and it wouldn't even be a question. I guess maybe you would say Chris Jones is basically already good enough. You could pick someone that's not very good to give it to. I wouldn't pick Frank Clark or Alex Okafor or Tino Passanio. I would pick, like, Derek Nnadi, because you let Derek Nnadi and Chris Jones, but Game Breakered Derek Nnadi, a Game Breaker is like you get style points and you can activate it before a snap, and they're basically superhuman at that point. They're untackleable for a while. A Game Breaker 2 just basically plays a little cutscene and they do something great and create a turnover or go score almost automatically or whatever. But if I could give a Game Breaker to anybody, it would just be Derek Nnadi or Mike Pinnell or Tershawn Wharton. Because getting interior pressure on Tom Brady consistently, I think, would virtually end the game. In this instance, though, that's not guaranteed. And the Bucks know that as well. So seeing how Brady is sort of forced or asked to work throughout the offense is going to be fascinating tomorrow. I think if that game starts with them trying to go downfield unsuccessfully, we're gonna see that game potentially get out of hand. Honestly, I don't have as much faith in the Chiefs pass rush right now as I would like to. There's actually a stat on that I'll bring around a little bit later. But I would love to see the interior pressure immediately show up. Teams are paying a lot of attention to Chris Jones, and no one else is really winning that often to make them pay for paying too much attention to Chris Jones. So I think that'll be a really interesting balance to see how that pass rush can figure that out and hopefully not allow Brady enough time to work back and work out to Antonio Brown and to Gronk and to Brate and to whatever back is in at that point. That'll be very interesting. Beards, you said you had a Chiefs Buck stat that you wanted to bring to the table.
I did. I like to look at point differential stuff every once in a while.
Sure.
Just for fun to see where everything is. Take into account the Chiefs have had a bye week and the Bucks have not with all of these stats I'm about to give you.
Have they not?
They have not. They're 7-4. So that's 11 games they've played.
Is there a bye after that? That's really strange.
So
hold on. Yeah, their bye is after this week.
Mm-hmm.
I thought everybody had a bye already. All right, sorry, go on.
The Chiefs are first in scoring, 321 points. The Bucks are second, 320. Chiefs are seventh in points allowed, first being the best, 214. Bucks are 14th, 253 points. Chiefs are second in point differential total, plus 107. Steelers are first. Bucks are sixth, plus 67.
I think that maybe the Chiefs' defense is the one that surprises people, because their points allowed have sneakily been still pretty good.
Yep.
but the Raiders have been a mess for them, and the Panthers caused some problems the game before. I also like some good. I love a good point differential. Taking a little peek at that. It also can be kind of, you know, yanked off center by blowouts and stuff, but those count. So there you go. That's kind of fun. If you look at point differential by standings, it's just kind of funny that you can see a bunch of teams in the green, and then there's the Browns, who are 7-3 with a negative 23 point differential. You don't see anyone else with a negative point differential until you get down to the Bears at 500.
The Jets are a minus 153.
I was just about to say this is something I checked on early in the year, and it is still true. The Jets at minus 153 as their point differential are more bad than the Steelers are good at plus 124. Basically, the Jets make everyone they play the Steelers more than the Steelers make everyone they play the Jets.
Meanwhile, the Dallas Cowboys are the worst defense in terms of scoring, 359.
They're a negative.
They're worse than the Jets by a margin.
Are they really?
Jets are at 302.
They've just scored more. Yeah, you're right. The Jets are negative 108. The Chiefs are plus 107. Or the Cowboys, I mean. The Cowboys are negative 108. The Chiefs are plus 107. They're basically the same on inverted sides of the point differential plot line.
They're literally just opposite teams.
Yeah. This is fun. I like a little point differential talk. Gets us through to the end of the segment. We'll take a break now, and whenever we come back, we'll be joined by Matt Connor of Arrowhead Addict. We'll talk to him about everything going on, everything we just talked about, a few of the storylines. Later on, I want to talk about Juan Thornhill a little bit, hear from some of the Chiefs press conferences from yesterday. We'll also talk a little KU with Matt Galloway at noon. That's the plan for the rest of the show here on Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810.
This is Sports Saturday with Joshua Briscoe.
Offensively, it's legitimately the best possible start, better than imaginable, the best possible start from like a literal perspective for Patrick Mahomes. What have you taken to be the most impressive thing that Mahomes has done through two games?
Man, isn't it that moxie? I love him. I look at him at the line of scrimmage, and I just want to marry him.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
That's an old liner from Matt Connor of Arrowhead Addict, who joins us now. Matt, I had a number of ways I thought I may introduce you. Matt Connor AA on Twitter, but the real question now is how do you feel hearing that back years later? Do you feel any differently about Patrick Mahomes?
I would renew my vows today. In fact, wouldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, the Chiefs did, you know, to the tune of $500 million. I don't know if I could foot that bill, you know, for whatever rings end up keep showing up, championship or otherwise, but I'd try. I'd take out the loan. I don't care. I'll do it.
I've been given plasma, my friend. I've been given plasma.
That's so good. A real quick piece of news here. It sounds like there are positive COVID tests coming out of Pittsburgh now. They put a couple of guys on the reserve list on Friday. So that game is supposed to happen on Tuesday now. We'll keep an eye on it. But the NFL is going to do everything it can to avoid the Week 18, it seems like, at this point. They're get some, which includes trying to play a game on Tuesday. We'll see. Baltimore and Pittsburgh both seem like an absolute COVID mess at this point. But that notwithstanding, Matt, we've been talking about the game coming up tomorrow, and I'm excited for what very well could be the last matchup between Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady. And I totally understand they're not going to be on the field at the same time and all of that. I also don't care. It's still Patrick Mahomes versus Tom Brady, at least in many ways, and I'm excited for it.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think the Chiefs have more tough games left than maybe what people would believe. But I think this is, you know, this could be a Super Bowl matchup. Mm-hmm. And that's always exciting to talk about, you know. Few players transcend the game to the point where my wife cares about what he's wearing and or who he's dating.
Right.
And this game features two of them. So even she's like, yeah, we're in. This is awesome.
It's the afternoon game, but I think it's going to really feel like a primetime matchup where everyone's going to be tuned into that in large part. Even if, you know, you're a red zone only watcher, I think there'll be a lot of red zone opportunities there. What stood out to you over the course of this week as we've heard from, you know, we heard from the coordinators yesterday? Obviously, Thanksgiving week kind of made the whole schedule a little bit wonky, but coming off the Raiders game, looking ahead to this one, what's caught your eye storyline wise other than what Mahomes and Brady are going to be wearing?
Well, gosh, I mean, if we're not talking about that, you know.
that's the headline. And then the secondary story is whatever.
You know, I think this defense of the Buccaneers is really something to write about and to pay attention to. But also, like, you know, I'm looking this week, the Chiefs have the single worst red zone defense in the NFL. Like, they're number 32 behind, well, anyone else. They'd probably be number 34 if you added two expansion teams. I mean, it's not good. And I've got to look at this going, how do we, in the second seat, I say we like I'm a part of the organization, but, you know, like, how do the Chiefs have such a poor showing where it matters most? You know, we're used to complaining about a defense that only got serious in the red zone, you know, and too much bend and don't break. But I'm wondering, you know, like, I mean, Brady's smart enough to take advantage of, you know, when the game is fastest in those last 10 yards. You know, like, this could really be, they're going to score with KC, and KC might have a tougher time scoring in general. So I don't like this matchup. I mean, I think the Chiefs will win. I would never bet against the Chiefs to lose at this point from now on until something crazy with the roster happens. But I think the Bucs have a really good chance here to show that they should be taken seriously as an NFC favorite or, you know, vital contender. And they're also, you know, they're also playing in a very tough division with the Saints, and the Chiefs are going to have a major say in that battle down the stretch.
Yeah. You know, the talent of any opposing defense I always think is fun because I'm like excited to see some of those individual matchups and whatnot, but it gives me less pause simply because I have faith that against the best defense, the best offense will still, to turn a phrase from our friend Nate Taylor, handle their business. You know, that's a part of the equation at this point. But the other side, though, looking at, like, the red zone defense, I mean, especially for this matchup, you know, typically offenses talk about how, you know, things get harder in the red zone because the field gets condensed. I think there's an argument that Tom Brady on a condensed field is what this offense from the Bucs actually needs more of. That maybe playing in a little bit more of a phone booth would actually be beneficial to an offense for the first time in NFL history.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, they've got the ideal red zone target, you know, and Mike Evans. You've got other guys who can create serious separation. I think the Chiefs are really going to have to stop them early because I think any drive that gets momentum is going to be a scoring drive and probably a 6-point scoring drive instead of a 3-point one.
Yeah. Do you think that there's anything that they can do to try to be more effective in terms of creating turnovers and stealing a couple of possessions back or doing something in the midfield where you say, all right, well, here's a place where maybe the matchups aren't as negative from the Chiefs' perspective?
Yeah, well, you know, I think overall, you know, for me, it's all about the Chiefs and nothing to do with the opponent almost ever. Like, to me, if they lose, it's because they lost the game. And if they win, it's because, like, you know, because they lived up to what they could do. And so I'm remembering that spat on the sideline last week involving Chris Jones. And I'm recalling some of the things he wrote on Twitter this week. And I'm just thinking there's got to be some fire in these guys being paid $20 million annually to sort of silence their critics. Because right now, a lot of people are, like, pretending we didn't win the Super Bowl last year and that they're not 9-1. Like, like, there's a lot of complaining about a team with one loss.
Yeah.
And a lot of that criticism stems from, yeah, we're paying $40 million a year to guys who can't even lodge, like, a decent amount of hurries, let alone, like, the sexier sack numbers. So, you know, given Brady's lack of mobility. I mean, you know, he's savvy enough to escape, but, you know, he's just not what he once was. And I think maybe it's time, for some of that to break through. You know, those guys play motivated football. And so I think that shows up this week.
I mean, Alex Okafor said yesterday, yeah, it was yesterday. All these days, there was Thanksgiving, and then there's been everything after Thanksgiving. Yesterday, Alex Okafor talked about the interior pressure, and, you know, I mentioned this last segment, but that's never been a secret at any point in Tom Brady's career, and really for any quarterback. If you can get interior pressure, it's going to make every quarterback a little worse, or at least some amount worse. And even for Patrick Mahomes, it'll knock the timing off and everything. So you're buying the idea that this week is going to be a bit of a rejuvenation, perhaps, for Chris Jones in the middle, for Frank Clark on the edge. I mean, there have been some stats that have shown exactly kind of how underproductive those guys have been. But you're betting on a bounce back?
Yeah, I think the criticism is a little heavy-handed, given all the context, and I think those guys have been better or have drawn more attention than like maybe average fan would know or understand just looking at a box score. But I also think, I think it's time for those guys to break out. And I think that's true of the whole defensive line. I mean, this is Passanio's contract year, mm-hmm. and he's performing far worse than last year. I mean, it's by any metric, it's miserable. He has, I think he has like one or two quarterback hurries. He has one sack. He's played 78% of the plays on the defensive line. Okafor has had a season to forget. So I think if Passanio's agent can remind him, like, yo, you still have a payday if you can show up strong down the stretch. And, as Okafor works his way back into game shape, I think that also only helps Jones and Clark as mm-hmm. they're receiving the lion's share of attention from opposing coordinators.
One thing we've talked about a little bit this week, and as a tease for a segment or two in the future, we'll talk about here later today. But Juan Thornhill's season has been really weird, especially obviously this week. He played the majority of the snaps in week one, played almost every snap for the five games after that, then played a few fewer snaps the couple weeks after that, and then last week he played 11 snaps. What Spags and Reed and even kind of Tyrann Mathieu have all discussed and how they've talked about Thornhill over the last several days has all been a little inconsistent to me, has all been a little confusing. What have you made of how that's all gone to this point?
Boy, I think that's the mystery, right? You know, like a year ago, we're talking about that maybe the Chiefs have the best safety tandem in football, or certainly maybe the best young safety tandem in football. And Teron's finally received some of his due in KC after, like playing with the Texans and whatnot. Thornhill, I got to believe it's part maybe bad play. I think it's maybe part declined skills after surgery.
Mm-hmm.
We've heard the rest thing. I think there's probably truth in all of it. I love Thornhill's attitude, at least online in his own like communications. He like will do these like inspirational sport quotes, like, you know, can't come back strong unless you've been down hard. You know, mm-hmm. like one of those like inspirational posters you hang on your dentist wall or something.
Right.
So, you know, like I'm down for it. Like other players would either be silent or complain or whatever. And whatever is happening internally, he seems to be taking it, owning it, and wanting to be refined by it. And so I guess if there's anything that's heartening to me, to try to balance the what the snaps is happening to Thornhill
mm-hmm.
is the fact that there seems to be a responsive player. Let's not forget, man, I put out this week because I was just like down memory lane in Chiefs, and I just said, hey, I think the most dominant player in Chiefs defensive history post Derek Thomas was Eric Berry.
Mm-hmm.
And I phrased it in the form of a question because I shouldn't have because it was rhetorical. Like, I mean that as a statement, and everyone else is wrong.
Right.
But the feedback on that was everyone was loving on DJ. Derek Johnson, no way, dude, you're wrong. Derek Johnson's the most dominant defender. DJ, how could you diss DJ like that? I'm like, well, no one dissed DJ, but whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we often forget that Todd Haley had to sit Derek Johnson down and go, hey, are you going to play up to your potential, or are we just going to phone in your career here?
Mm.
And, you know, we can sort of dog on Todd Haley for various things, but gosh, that was a master stroke of a coaching maneuver, because he played like a lion after that.
Yeah.
So, you know, is that what Reed is doing in his own players coach sort of way to Thornhill? I don't know, but I got to suspect at least something is at work in a way that we're not knowing about.
Yeah. The thing about it that still feels like a curveball to me is the fact that, and again, if it's for, you know, the greater good in some way, then so be it. But pulling Juan Thornhill and putting Dan Sorensen on the field for more snaps feels a little bit like hustling backwards, especially with the way that Sorensen's been used.
Yeah.
We've talked kind of about the matchups, you know, for Chiefs Bucks with the things that the Buccaneers offense might be able to do. But conversely, even though I feel, you know, some confidence about you know, a number of things on the Chiefs offense versus Bucks defense side, does that matchup do anything for you? Or is there anything that catches your eye that thinks this could be more than just a matchup between two good units?
Between the Chiefs offense and Bucks defense?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to think of. I mean, to me, the linebacker play is so poor across the NFL in general, and you know, it's like the Chiefs. Maybe the Chiefs fan base largely complain about their linebackers, but they're hardly the only team. You know, it's like offensive line. Really.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And so to me, the Bucs have one of the very few just awesome linebacking core.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when it comes to Levante David and Devin White. And so, you know, it's not often that Travis Kelce looks at the linebackers and goes, you guys are pretty much as strong and fast as me. I'm used to the mismatch here. So will Kelce have, you know, Kelce's on his way to, I mean, there's been light whispers about, like, is there a tight end MVP campaign going on here? And the Bucs are going to be the one team to go, yeah, I know you're used to the mismatch and sitting down and taking all the food you want from the table, but, you know, we got your lunch money here, buddy. Let's try this. So we'll see.
And so overall, I mean, you said at the beginning you think the Chiefs win this game, but what's your best guess as to how it pans out? Something that you think maybe you're relatively confident happens, or maybe a little bit of an upset somewhere across the field?
Yeah, no. I mean, I'm confident. I'm always confident that the Chiefs will win. I think they lost to the Raiders because the Chiefs simply weren't being the Chiefs, and I think that's the case. You know, we've looked back at a couple close games against the Panthers and the Chargers, and that will happen from time to time, and maybe that will happen here too. But yeah, to me, it's a major upset if the Chiefs ever lose, and I could care less who they're playing.
Yeah.
So I think Chiefs by 10 for sure, but there is something in the recipe here that could call for a Bucks win. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've seen the slip ups, and we've seen the Bucks look good at times, but also we've seen them look somewhat pedestrian whenever that offense gets a little uncomfortable. So we'll either way, I'm excited for it, and excited to have been able to talk to you about it, Matt. This was a genuine joy. Thank you for making some time for us here on this Saturday. It's still morning. It's 11:50. I'm going to say Saturday morning, and people can check out all your work up on Arrowhead Addict on Twitter at Matt Connor AA, and that does stand for Arrowhead Addict, nothing else. Just for clarification. Although I don't know, maybe it secretly does. Does AA stand for anything other than, you know, you just trying to get your life back together?
Always affectionate.
Thank you, Matt.
You got it. Good morning, guys. See ya.
Matt Connor, always affectionate at Arrowhead Addict. Follow him on Twitter, Matt Connor AA. Check out everything up at Arrowhead Addict that Matt oversees. Always great Chiefs content up there if you're interested in a few more things to get you ready for Chiefs Bucks tomorrow. I'm Joshua Briscoe here on Sports Saturday. More Sports Saturday next here on Sports Radio 810.
This is Sports Saturday with Joshua Briscoe.
Jaron on the Facebook page comments, Mahomes' handsomeness is too raw. He needs more time.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
One of the advantages to doing the weekend shows is that all of the liners are from, like, 2018. And so it gets a little trip down memory lane. I hadn't heard that Matt Connor one in a very long time. Thanks again to Matt for joining us. We'll have a double Matt day here on Sports. Hold on. You know, hey, listen. It's early in the day. We're having two men named Matt on the show. Today is a double matinee. Beards just shook his head, the smallest I've ever seen anyone shake their head.
Boo.
It's a matinee. It's a double matinee. It's a matinee double feature. Matt Connor, Matt Galloway will be on in a couple minutes. I feel like that's a decent joke. I think you're angry because you didn't think of it first.
Furious.
If you would have thought of it, you would have steamrolled me to get to the microphone to make that joke. I know you. You're not slick. You can't pretend that you're furious at the content of the joke. It's a good joke. Anyway. We'll talk about the Juan Thornhill thing with some help from the audio after we talk to Galloway next segment. One other piece of news from the safety position earlier today, the Chiefs cut Tedrick Thompson, safety that they brought in this offseason. He played a little bit early in the year, played significantly less over the last five or six games. As Seth Kaiser tweeted, "I don't understand what the Chiefs are doing with the safety position, even a little." And I think that checks out. Because the first thing that I thought whenever I saw that was, well, wait a second. If you're throttling back Thornhill's snaps, wouldn't you like to have at least the option of having Tedrick Thompson that you can throw back there? But he had some decent moments early in the year. He had some not so decent ones, and that's kind of who Tedrick Thompson's been pretty much his entire time in the league. So that wasn't a surprise. I don't know, man. I'm not sure I completely understand a number of the ways that they're going after the safety spot right now, because it feels like Matthew's going to play every snap, Sorensen's going to play every snap, and then we'll see. It's very weird. It's not like Thornhill's being run off the field because they have a lot of other great options. I said this with Matt Connor. It feels like there's a decent amount of hustling backwards whenever it's losing Thornhill snaps and meaning that Sorensen's going to be on the field constantly. It's strange. It's been a strange rotation. We'll talk about that more later, but we'll shift gears, talk a little KU basketball with Matt Galloway whenever we come back here on Sports Radio 810.